everyone that's watching, and hello, Sameen. Thank you so much for taking out the time and being with me and talking about a very important topic that everyone is, you know, talking about this month in the Mental Health Awareness Month. You know, I think that we've started talking about mental health a lot more than we have been doing in the past. But I also think that certain segments of society are still being overlooked in terms of the conversation, and maybe they should be included more in the conversation. And one of them being parents of special needs children, especially mothers of special needs children. And yes. So you are not only a teacher for special needs children, but you're also a mother of a special needs child. And just to sort of give everyone a brief introduction. So Sameen is a clinical psychologist with over 10 years of experience of working with children in special needs. She specializes in working with children with neurodevelopmental disorders like autism, ADHD, and dyslexia. And currently, she's working as a teacher to provide one-on-one support in a primary school in the UK. So that's great, Sameen. And what inspired you to become a special needs teacher?
First of all, thank you for allowing me to share my voice, because I think it's a very important thing for people to realize that they're not alone in this journey, and that there are a lot of people who are in the same sort of situation. So thank you for inviting me. And what inspired me, I got intrigued by psychology as a young adult myself, because the mind is, you know, an enigma. So I wanted to find out what makes these different situations and different people react to it differently. But when I started doing my clinical psychology, I worked with a colleague of mine who was doing research on translating the autism inventory, diagnostic inventory, in Urdu. So I worked with her there in Pakistan. And then obviously when I moved to the UK, that kept it was something which was with me to help the children as well as to help the parents become aware, because I feel the parents are not given the proper awareness as much. To be honest, that inspired me, looking at the children and how much we can still do to work with them and support them.
I just muted myself. So you have an autistic child, right?
Yes.
And so can I ask you when you received that diagnosis, how you found out that your child was autistic? What were some of the signs that maybe you picked up? Were you aware at that time as well?
I know a lot of people, when I tell them now, being I'm a psychologist, and everyone thought, oh, you must have known since he was a baby. But as a mom, you never really sort of, because you're a mom, you're not a psychologist at the time.
Yeah.
So as a mom, I thought he was just a very unsettled baby, because he had sleep issues since he was a small child. But when around 2 years old, he was not interested in socializing. He had very limited, rigid play, the way he used to play with things. So that got us to obviously start thinking that maybe we need to have him be assessed we never thought autism. We thought maybe a developmental delay. And to all the parents out there, don't worry about the journey, because it is a long journey. And as a parent, you have to, at every step of the way, you have to make the professionals agree with you, because nobody knows your child more than you do.
Yeah.
So as a parent, always remember that write down whatever concerns you have. And when my son, I used to make notes that he didn't sleep. He was a very fussy eater. So around 3 years of age, everyone agreed that he was on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't get the diagnosis till he was 4 and a half.
Okay. So which is the typical age for the diagnosis. Yeah, because even before that, I think it's tough to assess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So because by the time, because from two as a mom, I knew there was something not right. So by the time he was 4 and a half and diagnosed, I had pretty much accepted that the diagnosis was coming. And I was looking at what's next and how to help him, how to, because 4 is when they start schooling in the UK.
Yeah.
So what our mindset was to find a school which was good for him, to support him. And we've been very lucky that we had a wonderful school and we had a wonderful teacher one-to-one, which truly, I mean, she is one of the first one to inspire me to start looking at working at one-to-one. Because when my son was young, I was, as a mom, I was trying to support him. But then now that he's a teenager, I want to give something back. So I think the teachers who work with children with special educational need do a lot to not just support the child in supporting the family, supporting the moms, in helping the family understand how to help the child develop. So,
Thank you for sharing that. And I asked that because while I was listening to you, you said that, you know, when you were sort of expecting it, expecting the diagnosis, and then once you got it, you wanted to, you were just seeing what were the next steps, what you could do to move forward. And I think that's where early intervention plays such a big role. Because I think that a lot of parents, they just don't accept it. And like you said, that you accepted it, and acceptance is actually the first step to moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, As a mom, I've seen other moms. That's why when you asked what inspired me, as a mom, I felt that it is a long journey and it is a very lonely journey to begin with, because I'm lucky that my background is psychology.
Exactly.
So I understood what is happening. I also understood that what has caused it. It's a neurodevelopmental disorder.
Yes.
And there is no cure, as in you can't give a medicine and your child is suddenly,
and most parents, they don't have that knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's why I started, as you mentioned before, I also started working with moms who have children with special needs, because the first question that everyone used to ask me is, when will he be cured?
Yeah.
And that is the question which used to break my heart, because as a mom, I know there is no cure. But for those moms who have children and they got the diagnosis, the first thought they had is, okay, he'll be cured. And that is a very hard thing for a mother to accept. Mm-hmm. Because as a mom, you feel a lot of guilt that, did I do something wrong to make him autistic? Could I have done anything different that he would have been fine? Did I do anything in my pregnancy? Did I do anything when he was a baby? So I've started working with children as well as mothers, especially because I feel the society, if it's, I mean, any society, just puts the pressure on the mother that she has to find the solution, she has to find the cure.
It's just unreal expectations. Absolutely, yeah.
And I mean, that's why I'm part of the Black Asian Minority Ethnic Group, which is BAME, because I work with moms who sadly don't have the family support as well, because everyone expects the mother to just suddenly come up with a solution to neurodevelopmental disorders when it is the brain which is not working right.
Right.
And medically, and everyone knows, if there's something in the brain, you can't cure it. You have to manage it.
Yes, manage it.
So, I mean, acceptance is the first key. And then supporting each other to be aware of what's happening. Because I've been very lucky to be surrounded by family members who accepted as well as were aware that what is going on. But a lot of moms, as this is a mental Aware Health Awareness Week, I feel a lot of parents, especially moms, I keep saying moms because I think the pressure is on moms.
Yes.
That they are not alone. It is, firstly, they need to accept it is not their fault. And nothing, I mean, they could have done differently. It's just something that is there. and this to support each other, to have groups. I mean, and with the COVID, I felt online groups were really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So to talk to each other, to share your worries. Because as a mom of, as a teacher as well as a mom, I know so many mothers who are not very comfortable speaking to people who have neurotypical children.
Yeah.
So a mom,
there's no relatability. They might think that there's no relatability there, right?
Yeah. They might even, I mean, I went through the grief stages, Maida. I went through the denial, the anger, the depression, mm-hmm. which is understandable. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them get stuck with depression because there's nobody to help them understand that it's okay. Look at the future. Look at how much, because you have to change the milestones.
I'm intrigued by your story. And I want to ask you what was that point for you when you said, you know, it's okay? Like you said that you've gone through all the stages of grief. So what was that point and how long did it take you to...
It is a long time, to be honest. You go back and forth as a mom.
Yeah.
The mother's guilt was one of the fundamental steps that it took time to get out of. Because when I had... He's my firstborn. So when he was a baby, I didn't have a lot of family around at that time. So I used to think, oh, if I was with family, maybe it would have been different. So I went through a lot of mother's guilt, which turned into obviously denial and depression. But luckily, as I said, acceptance came it wasn't as hard for me as it is for others because I had I have a lovely family who have always been supportive. My husband himself works with mental health, so he understood what was going on.
That was my next question, actually. How important is the partner's support in such
Very important, yes. Because obviously you are the parents, and nobody understands your child. I feel a lot of moms are, because they are obviously, they're the moms, they are the ones who stay at home with the child.
Yeah.
So they feel that bond, which is very different to the bond that even a father has.
Yes.
So acceptance for a mom, I think, takes longer because she has to see all the struggles. She has to see all the meltdowns. And there's a story, I don't know if you've heard, that you've been given a map of Holland, but you end up in Denmark. So you don't know what to do in Denmark. So that's how, I mean, you are, as a mom, you're pregnant and then you have this whole picture that this is what's going to happen. And then suddenly that picture changes. So every day you have to change your milestone. You have to change your expectations, which is very hard. You have to change the future aspirations for your child. And I even wrote a blog. It is like you have to bury the child that you thought you were going to have. And you have to raise the child that you have now. So nobody realizes that it is very hard for a mother because obviously she has to bury all the dreams she had for the child. So she feels quite lonely. So I feel... As a mom, that's why I started supporting the BME group. Because when as a mom I talk to them, they listen. Because they're not like, oh, she doesn't know what I'm going through. Because we know what all of us are going through. Because some of us are in the stages. Somebody has a 2-year-old, so she's still just starting.
Yes.
But if somebody has a 22-year-old, she's gone through the stages. So it's really important to have a social support group of people who are going through the same journey, even though they're on the different levels of that journey. But at least they can talk to each other. For example, one of the major things that my son had was sleep. He never slept. And obviously babies don't sleep, but then a toddler, he never slept. 8-year-old, 9-year-old, he never used to sleep a lot. So a lot of moms never understood till I met the other moms who were as sleep deprived as I was. So we understood each other. And now that I work with children, I see their moms, and I feel as a mom of a child with special needs, when I meet the parents of my students, I can empathize more because there's a connection which is hard to explain.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of friendships which is just based on our children.
Yeah.
And we are different personalities, but our children sort of bring us together.
Yeah.
So that, I think that network is very, very important to survive and go through this journey.
Yeah. So actually you answered a lot of my questions already. One of the things that comes to my mind is that each child probably has unique needs, right?
Yeah.
So when you're in a classroom full of children with special needs, but each child has unique needs, how do you handle that? And then saying, and your relationship, and just to expand on that, your relationship with their mothers, what's the sort of common ground that you guys can bond upon?
I'm working in the UK. So we have, I usually work in primary education. With a special school where the class is just specifically for children with special needs, the curriculum is very different to what the national curriculum is. So our curriculum is not based on reading, writing, as much as it's based on helping them. They can read, because a lot of people have this myth and misconception that neurodevelopmental disorders mean learning disability.
Mm.
It's not an IQ disorder. It's just a communication disorder. So our focus as teachers in a classroom is all of them have different needs. But the most common, we focus on the common ones, which is a communication.
Makes sense.
Because all of them struggle with communicating their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a Mechaton, which is pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Or we have a PECS, which is picture exchange communication. So our curriculum is based on helping them to not read, but helping them to understand what they have read.
Mm-hmm.
With the classroom, we have interventions. So if we will start with a very quiet, so they, all of them are sitting in a circle. But if somebody is feeling overwhelmed, then we are assigned sort of pupils.
Okay.
So I know if my pupil is feeling a bit agitated this morning, and if he's feeling a bit, he had a restless night, then we will change the curriculum for him, sort of the day that we will start with him in a sensory room rather than in the school hall, so that he has a chance to sort of be calmer. So that's how we work on, because all of us know our roles.
Yeah.
All of us know the triggers as well.
For your pupil.
We know when the child is about to burst out, because
you can
pick
up on those cues. Yeah.
Yes, because he might be covering his ears, he might be biting his hands. So we know when to sort of get in and help them be calmer. And with the parents, obviously the parents are very, communication is very important. As I said, we have diaries that the parents write in, what sort of a morning he had, or she was not happy getting in the car, or, so we write to each other. So that when the child comes in, we are aware what the parent has written. And then at the end of the day, we write what the child did in school. So the parents know what sort of day she or he had in school.
So it's a very intimate relationship. Like it's very,
Yes, because it is built on trust.
Exactly.
Because their children can't tell them what they did in school.
Of course.
Some of them are nonverbal. Some of them don't even remember what they did. So the parents do hand their children to us, and it is a lot of trust, responsibility. And I went into it because as a mom, I know when I used to drop my son off, and you feel that you can only trust a few people with him, because he won't tell me if, God forbid, he had if a child was bullying him.
Yeah.
So I trusted his one-to-one to be aware, to be his protector while he was in school, sort of. And I think the parents, yeah, we communicate with diaries as well as we have a lot of meetings. We had a lot of workshops. We always keep the parents aware of what we are doing because each child has their communication journey. And there's a thing called individual educational plan, which are IEPs in England. Mm-hmm. So each child has that. And regularly we assess it with the parents. And we tell the parents if they want to change something, if they feel some things can be added, if he or she has done something at home that is a breakthrough. So it's a very important bond as well as a trust.
A very important collaboration. It's a collaborative effort. And so now I'm wondering, with all this one-on-one support and such wonderful things that you're telling me, how did COVID impact this? Because I'm sure the one-on-one would have ceased, right, during that. And what did you do to overcome that?
Well, like in COVID, I can tell you the mom's side more than the teacher because my son was home and the teachers were brilliant because they were sending videos, they were sending, obviously we couldn't rely on them to be doing homework. We did not have the expectations that they would be writing essays or doing fractions, which they can do, but it was a very unsettling time for all the children, the parents, the teachers. So as a parent, I felt the support was really lovely because they used to send videos for him where he could interact, where he could, because every child has his own needs.
Yeah.
So they used to send that he can paint today or he can color in the numbers, depending on that child's understanding. But I think for the children as well as parents, the hardest was the uncertainty of it because change is a big thing. And for them to be home with no routine of going out of the house, of changing into the uniform. So I mean, they did tell us you can in the morning keep the routine, make them get into their uniform, sit in front of a desk for a bit to sort of have a routine. I made visuals for my son that today is Monday and we're going to do this and today is Tuesday. But in the UK, another thing which was really helpful is they did allow some children to go back to school. Okay. Children with special educational needs could be sent to school if they found staying at home too overwhelming.
Okay.
Because some schools were open for certain children, but because of staff ratio, I didn't send my son. He was home.
Okay.
And I think, thankfully, he was not too stressed, but it was an uncertain time. But it also taught us, Maida, that online education became sort of a part of life.
Which was my next question. Yes.
So it became a sort of. I mean, the teachers used to send us Zoom links or used to send us videos, and my son and his class fellows used to, which was lovely to see. They would have a Zoom call, and sort of even though they don't. My son doesn't recognize friends. He doesn't have a lot of social interest. But it was nice to see them, nice to have an on and off chat with the teachers and see the other parents. And as I said, with my apart from my son's school, the BME group, we also had online meetings.
Yeah.
So we used to talk to each other as moms. And we used to also laugh it off because our children were sort of eating everything and jumping up and down.
It's very important to not take yourself that seriously in these situations as well. So I'm wondering, Sameen, is that the online education is one aspect of it, but your support group that you had for mothers, I think that it must have taken off a little bit of pressure, you know, from every day just to be talking to other moms that are in the same situation. And so this brings me to my next point, which is there's a wave of telemedicine and of virtual sort of, remote patient care. And so in this context of mental health, I think, and especially mothers with of special needs children, how important do you think it is for them to seek help, first of all? And what role do you think that online therapy is playing right now? And if you have any message for such mothers, what would it be?
I think COVID taught us that the world, became very easy to access.
Yeah.
I myself was doing things online because I have three children. So all of them had online lessons. And then all of us, even moms of my neurotypical children, we used to get together and would have a Zoom call, because I think with all children, special needs and not, COVID was a very, very hard time.
Definitely.
But the best thing that came out of it is that this telemedicine platform, that you don't have to sort of brave the situation because with children with special needs, especially, leaving the house is a whole sort of exhausting exercise. And a lot of moms felt they can't, some didn't have childcare, they couldn't leave their children. Even now, I know a lot of my friends in the BME and other groups, they feel they don't want to go out. It is, there's still the fear of COVID, as well as they've gotten comfortable being in their own environment.
Yes.
And I think telemedicine is amazing because you can access interventions in the comfort of your home, where I think mentally you're more relaxed, emotionally you can share more, and you don't have to sort of organize that, I have to leave the house by this time.
Yeah.
And because I know a lot of moms who don't even drive.
Right.
So they depend on their spouses or family members to take them to the hospital, to take them to the clinics. And I think with
telemedicine, it's just more of an effort, I think, right? It's just more of an effort to get ready, go, or depend on someone else for such a basic need. And like you said, I think that not only for mothers with special needs, but just everyone in general, COVID has had such an impact on their mental health. And so accessibility or access to such resources is very important. And I'm glad that you shared that. Yeah.
Yes, because I think a lot of parents, and regardless of their children's needs, COVID made them a lot depressed. The feelings of loneliness was one of the major things that came out of it, because a lot of people felt alone, everything. Because if you looked outside, it was completely empty.
Yeah.
And my boys one day were sitting in the garden and they said, "Mom, look, there are no aeroplanes," and which is a big thing.
Yes.
There were no planes in the air. So it sort of made you
realize that. Like, they're so observant. Kids are very observant. We don't give them enough credit. Yeah.
I know. So there was no, and I said, "Hey, you're right. There are no aeroplanes." So it did feel like you were a part of sort of like a, suspense.
Yeah. And UK particularly took a very bad hit. So,
yes.
Yeah.
The feeling of loneliness, as you said, the roads were empty. So I think this online is amazing, because a lot of parents feel stressed out that they have to go out, they have to share with someone, and they have to sort of brave the world already before they even arrive at the clinic.
Yeah.
So I think telemedicine takes away a lot of that stress of sort of getting yourself out of that comfort zone. And with online, I think, interventions, the best thing is that it is easy to access. Because a lot of people feel, I don't want to go out, I don't want to get dressed, or, I might meet other people who might ask, "What are you doing here?" There's a lot of
stigma as well. Yeah.
And then you feel, and then it's easy access in the sense that you can choose the time, because it's the comfort of your home. And especially with moms, around the housework, you can choose that, when my children are in school, or I can choose a time when I am available and I have a bit of a time that I can talk to someone and I can share easily. And even with telemedicine, you can be anonymous as well, because you don't have to open your cameras. You don't have to, it can be on the phone, which I think provides, I mean, the moms that I know, they feel more at ease with talking to someone on the phone or online rather than face to face.
So
I think that is one of the main things that came out of COVID, is that it is, and even, I mean, if and one more thing that I felt, that even if you miss a phone call, they can call you back, which helped a lot, because if you miss an appointment face to face, that is sort of gone.
Right.
But if they call you and you know the time, then you can choose the time, they can call you, you can, you know.
It won't take as long as a follow-up, as a next follow-up appointment,
I think you're more available and you feel more keen to share with, in a telemedicine platform, I feel.
Right, thank you. And just before we wrap up, any message you have for mothers with special needs children?
First of all, I know it's a very easy thing to say for me now that I've gone through a lot of the journey.
Yeah.
Don't feel guilty. Because as a mom, that's one thing that I struggled with myself, the guilt that you have. So don't feel guilty, because this is something that was meant to be. And just sort of find...
And it's something that you have... Sorry, I'm cutting you off. But there's something that you don't have any control over either.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then second thing is always do find a support groups around you, because there's nobody, support groups won't judge you. Don't feel they will be sort of putting pressure on you that why hasn't your child started speaking? Oh no, he's still doing this. She's still, using a pushchair, for example.
Yeah.
So a support group for moms with children in the same sort of situation is very important, because feeling lonely adds to the depression, adds to the guilt, adds to the hardships of the journey. So I think with this Mental Health Awareness Week, it's very important for moms especially to ask for help. And if somebody is giving you help, take it. Because it's not a failure on you as a mom to say, yes, I can't do this, which is the hardest thing. As a mom, you're like, I can do anything. But as a mom, the first step is get the help. And it's okay if you're tired, because as a human being, you're tired. It's okay to say, I need a break, because a break is not abandoning your children. A break is just going and lying down for an hour without, the stress.
Recharging you. Actually, to further take care of your children. Yeah.
Yes, but a lot of parents, a lot of moms especially, I felt if they say, I need a break, they're like, but you're a mom. Yeah, but moms are humans, so you need a break. And don't feel guilty about taking a break and seeking help. And always look for support groups around you, because I think that's one of the most important things in the journey.
All right. Well, thank you. This was such an insightful conversation to hear
thank
from
you.
Somebody that has gone through the journey. I mean, we read as a healthcare professional, I've read about autism. I've read about, the challenges, but to hear it one-on-one from someone who's been through that, I think it hits you differently. And I think it's going to be that the insights that you've shared and your experience are going to be invaluable to so many other people who will listen to this. So thank you so much.
Thank you. No, thank you so much, Maida.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care.